Hello, welcome to Soul Up with Kayleen Welsh. I'm recording this on Friday afternoon and cooler temperatures have moved in. We've gone from a pretty hot streak about a week ago to much cooler temperatures this week, and it reminds us of the turning of the seasons. For this weekend, I hope you got some good plans and some fun things to do. One of the things that I would like to call your attention to is the Perseid meteor showers around your neighborhood, because there's a few different places doing the viewing parties. But the Perseid meteor showers are awesome. They are awe-inspiring and just really powerful to watch. So if you've never taken the time to do that, I would encourage you to do so. And I will just tell you a brief story about the first time that I caught the Perseid meteor showers. And maybe one of the reasons I get so excited about them is because it seemed like I lived an awful long life without really realizing that they were happening. So I was a significantly old adult when I was hearing about the Perseid meteor showers, and I decided to go out on my deck one night and just kind of hang out there and watch and see if I could see anything. And this was on a deck in a small town, so there wasn't a lot of light late at night, but you know, there was still some ambient lights. It was a nice evening. I laid out on the deck, a blanket and a pillow and my little cozy chair, and hung out there for a while and ended up falling asleep without seeing anything. I don't know what exactly woke me up, but I woke up and it was like the sky was filled with light, just zooming streaks of light. There was something about that was so powerful and awe-inspiring for me that I felt it on a really big level. So I just sat there and watched in awe as these streaks of light went across the sky, and maybe in some way it just told me on a deeper level that I am a part of a bigger picture. But it was a really powerful experience. So I would encourage you to go on out and take your family and go watch the Perseid meteor showers. Just a little details about them. They are actually debris from the comet Swift-Tuttle that has been coming around for a number of years. We can track it back through history. It comes closer to Earth about every 133 or so years. And the last time it entered our solar system was in 1992. To watch meteor showers, the greatest thing you can do is just find a dark place, you know, a dark night sky. And if you haven't heard about the dark sky movement and the need to be more aware of our light pollution and what we're doing, what we're eliminating or prohibiting ourselves from seeing by lighting up the sky so much, talks about there's different ways we can do that, but dark sky initiative. But you want to find a dark sky as best you can. Look north toward the constellation Perseus. We hear meteors called shooting stars, but they aren't really shooting stars. What they are streaks of light in the sky that are caused by dust and rocks that burn up as they hit the Earth's atmosphere, coming in really fast. And they just create bright streaks of light. But there's so many of them, and it's really fun to watch. Typically, peak for Perseid meteor showers, it's not unusual to see 50 to 75 meteors per hour. Meteors are out there all the time, but we don't, you know, often see them. And we have this opportunity to see them in bigger groups at certain times. So the Perseids is really popular. It's one of those streaks of meteors that's super popular because it occurs in the summertime. The next one that would be another opportunity is the Geminids, which happen in December. Typically, they bring even more meteors, but it's a little colder to be out there. So anyway, typical best views are between midnight and pre-dawn, and that's because at that point, we're really on the leading side of the Earth. It's like the comet debris comes at us like if we're driving along and it's coming at us like rain toward the windshield. Or if you're driving around on a Wisconsin night and the fish flies are out, we all know what that's like, right? When the fish flies are flying into your windshield. When we're facing north and looking in this direction and looking for these Perseid meteor showers, that's what that's like. We see that kind of flash of light coming at us. The other thing that I want to talk about with this podcast episode is to talk about just what is soul? What do I mean when I say, you know, let's soul up? what is that really even talking about, and how do we do that, and how would we know if we've done that? And it's really a process, so how do we even tell, like, you know, it's not like it's something that we achieve or don't achieve. It's something that is an ongoing thing. But so let's just talk about ego and soul, which I see as essentially the two basic ways that we can understand our inner dynamic. If you want to soul up, which really is essentially about being the best you that you can be, it's really helpful to understand the dynamics of your system. We as human beings are pretty complex. We are multidimensional. I always think physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. We are a life form that even the most brilliant scientists and visionary minds don't completely understand. And so to further complicate things, we try to talk about some of these intangible things, some of these aspects of human life that are just not easy to put into language. Words have their own energy that different people react to in different ways. And, you know, we can see this in our everyday conversations. Words like self, or, you know, some of the more charged ones like soul, spiritual, religion, even love and light, God, these are highly charged words that evoke different responses based on a person's individual experiences and their perspective, their teaching, what they've been conditioned, what they've been taught. So talking about this nebulous, intangible aspect of life called soul is challenging. Yet we get a sense of it, right? We feel it. We feel something. In some deep core place, we feel that, I don't know, pull, an allure, a longing, a resonance, a knowing that there's something more. We feel it in our bones. So even if ideas of soul and spirit are not scientifically validated, or we have no tangible proof, we can feel it in our bones. There was a meme that came across my Facebook newsfeed recently that caught my attention. It said, "Being taught to avoid talking about politics and religion has led to a lack of understanding of politics and religion. What we should have been taught was how to have a civil conversation around a difficult topic. I think it's time that we talk about the things that we struggle to talk about, the things we struggle to find the right words for, words that we can agree on or hold space for." Brené Brown, in her powerful book, Brave the Wilderness, talks about the need for us to have these conversations. And what she says is, it's time to get real. There's so many things that we avoid in conversation. So that's one of the things that I hope to do with this podcast, is to bring some of these voices and some of these topics of things that we don't really talk about or know how to talk about or have difficulty talking about. I want to bring them forward. And so in today's episode, I want to offer us a simple construct. You know, we do have a way to make things very complicated. But let's see if we can break this down to a simpler view. I want to give you a way of understanding your inner dynamic so that you can work a little more effectively with your complete self to create the life that you want here on Earth, and which will also fulfill your spiritual destiny. You are made of dirt and stardust. If we accept the concept that we are spiritual beings having a human experience, which 76% of Americans declare to be true, we can reasonably conclude that there are two main aspects to our being. We are our body, and we are something beyond our body. Wisdom teachings tell us that there are seven layers or bodies of man. These layers coalesce to contain the entirety of our being, spanning the breadth of our completeness, from our humanness, our physicality, our body, our relation to matter, and our place in the natural earthly world, to our divinity, our ability to see beyond matter, to know that we are part of something greater, to experience the abundant riches of life's intangible gifts, love, joy, creativity, beauty, wonder, awe, and everything in between. We have the capacity to be fully human and fully divine. Each of these aspects, spirit and matter, is represented within our being. They are the two big players in this inner evolutionary game we play, and I would identify them in our individual unique states as soul and ego. Let's just start, though, with spirit. That's where it all begins. Let's consider for a moment the qualities of spirit that are our innate traits. Love, compassion, faith, creativity, enthusiasm, abundance, joy. These are the qualities that are part of our divine birthright. They're intangible, they're priceless. We all feel them, and yet we don't have any way to pick them up and carry them around. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that just as one and the same sun shines over every body on this earth, so one and the spirit shines over and illumines every soul. Through each of us, spirit connects with the developing human being. Again, that's us, right? It enters into the experience of itself through the more dense physical environment of Earth. Now, I don't know exactly how this all works. I'm certainly not a scientist seeking to understand. We can see its complication, and we can start putting together some of the pieces. At some point in the process, though, spirit, some animating life force, has merged into matter through basic elements, carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, calcium. They're what form the building blocks of a developing human fetus. That baby begins. Spirit and matter meet to become a human soul. That's you and me, mom, that's the neighbor. That's each of the 7.5 billion of us humans currently on the planet. Once we come into this body, a lot gets to happening with that developing human form, right? This new life must develop a body and learn to use it. And it must have time for its brain to mature, and that's what enables language and concrete thinking skills. A newborn, a baby, is unable to survive on its own, so it is reliant on others for its care and well-being. You and me and my mom and all these other people were born a whole being, an embodied blend of human and divine, but without the self-awareness or matured consciousness. We're just not there yet. We feel that as a disconnection from source. So now, disconnected, alone, and definitely reliant on life around us, you begin the work of figuring out who you are. You start to form an identity, an I. And we can refer to this I as the ego, also called the false self, the personality, the conditioned self, the learned self, the wounded self. Your ego is the image that you have of yourself, the mask that you put on for the world. This process of ego development begins in the womb, as our sense of self is shaped by our experience of the world around us. Do we feel safe and tended to as we enter human existence? What emotional experiences do we take in from the energy fields of our parents and caregivers? Much of our ego development occurs in the first 3 years of life, the first 36 months. It is pre-verbal and unconscious. From this foundation, our ego continues to develop through our experiences. We take in what people around us say we are and how we should be. We look at ourselves in comparison to others And then we make a decision as to where we stand. Are we good enough? How do we compare? We form core beliefs, deciding who we are and what type of world we live in. This belief system comes together to mold the person that we show up as every day. Ego helps us to learn how to fit in, how to follow the rules, how to get along with others. How, you know, we have to find a job and pay the bills. Ego tells us what it means to be successful. It's the home of logic, black and white, right and wrong, cut and dried. It's focused in matter. For a long time, as we're growing and developing and figuring out this life, the loud and in-your-face voice of the ego drowns out the quiet call from the depths voice of the soul. Ego feels threatened by anything unknown and resists anything it can't control. The great poet Rumi said, "The ego is a veil between humans and God." This is because fear is the natural state of the ego. Ego finds comfort and safety in limits and constraints. So you can learn to spot your ego. When your ego is in charge, you're often caught in circling thoughts. It's when that monkey mind takes over, thinking about the same things over and over again. You get consumed by your emotions, especially hurt, worry, and anger. Drama and stress tend to direct your day. Your inner dialogue gets heavily focused on the anxieties, right? The fears, doubts, self-criticism, you know, those statements of, I'm not good enough, I can't do this, my life is meaningless, things just don't work out for me, what's the point? We also see ego when we decide that our worth is dependent on external things, material wealth, having a partner, social popularity or career success. We see ego when we seek validation from other people. And we see ego when we're easily bruised, like when things just don't go our way. People don't act the way we want them to. They let us down. They say or do things that offend us. According to Eckhart Tolle, here's his quote. "The most common ego identifications have to do with possessions. The work you do, social status and recognition, knowledge and education, physical appearance, special abilities, relationships, person and family history, belief systems, and often nationalistic, racial, religious, and other collective identifications. None of these is you." In a black and white world, the ego often gets labeled bad, but that's not true. We need it. We just fall out of balance and get stuck there. We need a strong, healthy ego. We need a strong I, because it is through the ego that we fully live our humanness. This is what allows us to live here on the planet and do what we need to do. And it is living there which allows us to grow beyond and access our spiritual consciousness. As beings of planet Earth, we evolve. First physically, then emotionally, then mentally, then spiritually, if we make it that far. The ego is the foundation, the I that is needed to access the greater I am. It's just that the ego gets stuck in a limited perspective. It constricts rather than opening to a bigger picture. When it gets shaken, unsettled, it strengthens its effort to keep us safely contained in the logical, comfortable, familiar box of matter. But it's not all of you. There is more to consider. Human life starts with growing the container, right? That's where it starts. We need the physical body. Then the emotional body emerges. It gives us feedback, constantly using our senses to reflect our interaction with the world. That's what the emotional body does, feelings. It's in this space that life finds color and sensation. Next, we develop mind, gaining capacity for understanding and empathy. We begin to analyze and discern. We work our way up through Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which logically says that we have to satisfy our human needs before we can move on to satisfaction of our spiritual needs. We have to have our basic physiological needs, our survival needs met. We need food, water, shelter, warmth. Then we need to feel safe and to find a sense of belonging. It is not until those needs are met that we can open to even developing a stronger sense of self-esteem and value. That is the ego. And from there, we can open up to self-actualization and a more conscious exploration of this greater universe that we live in, as we recognize that there's more to bring forward. Having an ego is not the problem. It's getting stuck there. It's thinking that that's all there is. In the meantime, the quiet voice of the soul waits. It quietly emerges in moments of compassion, a heartfelt hug, the glee of pure freedom, you know, like when you're flying on a swing. It comes forth in awe when we experience just a beautiful scene in nature or in the primal miracle of birth. When we're ready, the universe prods us. When we've got enough of a foundation underneath us, the universe moves to prod us onto the next step. Usually it's through pain. The pain of our unresolved emotions, all the things that have not been integrated or completed, comes to a bursting point. Sometimes it takes us a while to hear the call. But sooner or later, evolve we will. The trials and tribulations of human life have a way of cracking open the ego, creating space, as they say, for the light to get in. And the light shakes things up. We begin to ask questions. We feel deep in our core the impact of love. We find value and appreciation in the intangibles, creativity, curiosity, wonder, awe, joy, passion, kindness. We wonder and we seek, and we get glimpses of something more. Life has a way of waking us up so that we can move beyond the boundaries of our humanity into another level of expression. The deep, holy longing that's always calling us forward. First we develop in body, then in mind, and finally in spirit. Gradually, individually and collectively, we transcend the limitations of matter and rise to an ever-increasing awareness of our greater potential. It's said that the first half of life is spent developing the ego, and that we spend the second half of life healing the ego that we built in that first half. As the soul brings healing and integration, the ego moves into a place of cooperation and becomes the soul's instrument for expression in the world. Which brings us back to our place on the planet today. As spiritual beings having a human experience, in this mix of spirit and matter, each of us shows up here as a human soul. The soul is where spirit and matter meet. The challenge is to integrate the pieces, transcend the confined life and limited perspective of the ego, and rise to our fullness as divine beings. The soul is that part of us that links the most dense and basic core of our substance, the elements of our physical structure and our animal nature, to that of the cosmic heavens, full of light and love, lots of vital energy. Your soul is your essence, your true self. It exists in a higher frequency range than the ego and emits a more powerful vibration. It is the you that lies far beyond the labels, roles, expectations, and social masks. Integration of both aspects of our nature, matter and spirit, human and divine, is the task, our mission, the destiny of all of us. In doing so, we become what ancient wisdom teachings called soul-infused personalities. We open our consciousness to a higher source, letting it lead the way as we go on about our earthly life. As we open to the messages and awareness of the soul, we link with spirit and remember the truth of our divine nature. We begin to access greater sources of knowledge, and we open new eyes, intuition, inspiration, and insight. Using the healing power of soul connection, we begin to integrate the wounded pieces of our psyche and resolve those unfinished experiences of the ego. And as we find greater wholeness, holiness, we are better able to live from a place of love, which is the natural state of the soul. We move beyond limiting beliefs and a restricted identity into fuller expression of our spiritual identity. As we better hear the voice of our soul, the voice of the ego begins to soften, releasing us to experience an expanded form of existence. You can learn to spot your soul. When your soul is in charge, you get a gut feeling about things, an intuition, an inner voice that guides you. You realize you love and accept yourself where you are, humbly acknowledging your strengths and your ongoing growth edges. You can spot your soul through your preferences, desires, and ideas that bubble up from within you, not from external influences. You can see your soul when you get a feeling of being in the flow, you know, finding that ability to ride the waves of life's experience with a greater sense of safety, peace, and faith. You can spot your soul when you are more easily able to accept people as they are, faults and all. And you can spot your soul in that indescribable connection with the entire universe. Those moments where you see the magic, and those times that take your breath away. Just the other day, I had to sit down and just take in the whole experience of feeling happy. I was feeling so happy and I didn't want to miss it. You see your soul when you feel empowered, purposeful, and with a desire to give your unique gifts to the world. Natasha Dern summarizes the polarities between the soul and the ego this way. The ego feels separate. The soul knows its connection to everything. The ego takes, the soul creates. The ego acquires, the soul shares. The ego is obsessed with competing while the soul cooperates. The ego expresses self-will. The soul expresses divine will. The ego is often aimless, consumed with the latest surge of desires, gadgets, fads, yet the soul has a clear sense of meaning and purpose. Essentially, the soul is the observer or witness, the higher consciousness that watches the train wreck that is the ego. As John Lennon said, part of me suspects that I'm a loser, and the other part of me thinks I'm God Almighty. As a human species, we've gone through eons of evolution to reach this point in our existence. We've come this far on our journey home. Spiritual visionaries say that humanity has achieved the ability to make a huge leap forward in evolution. If enough individuals make the choice to live in love, access the courage to free themselves from the fear and limitations of the ego, and live with the expanded awareness of the soul, we can activate a tipping point for all humanity. Together, we can create, as Eckhart Tolle declared, a new heaven and a new earth. For many recent years of our human development, people found and developed their spiritual nature in solitude. They went on pilgrimages and moved to mountaintops, and studied in ashrams. That is no longer the way. The challenge of our time is to bring soul alive, to bring spirituality into daily life and all aspects of our existence. We must learn to hold patience in the midst of relationships, faith through moments of confusion, trust in the midst of self-doubt, joy to soothe all of our experiences. It is not an easy task. In fact, it is incredibly difficult to dismiss the allure of the ego and the pressures of human life and allow yourself to be led by the nebulous concept of the soul. It is a moment-by-moment choice where you encounter the concept of free will. Some days we choose better than others. This is not a straightforward and linear process. Thomas More, in his book Original Self, says that the soul cycles and twists, repeats and reprises, echoing ancient themes common to all human beings. Yet it is always circling home. Even if you manage to tap into this more expansive, higher vibrational soul part of you a few minutes a day, your life will improve in magical and beautiful ways. As we bring spirit into form, we bring heaven to earth. I appreciate the words of William Wordsworth. Our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that rises with us, our life star, hath had elsewhere its setting, and cometh from afar. Not in entire forgetfulness, and not in utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory do we come. I hope that you find time to get out this weekend and find those trails of cosmic glory as they streak across the sky with the Perseid meteor shower. Take good care and shine on.
Birdie in the air, nothing can compare. You're worth more than the whole.